Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The 2024 election is in full swing. And yes, age is an issue. I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old. Well, I feel great. I really feel great. I'm campaigning all over the country, Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina. I've always done well in the original 13 colonies. Age is the only thing we have in common. My vice president actually endorses me.
Well, it's shocking that the White House Correspondents' Dinner was a safe space of sorts for Joe Biden. We don't have it here, but did you guys hear the bicycle one?
No.
I don't know what the first part of it was. This is great joke telling on the Andy Fry Show. But one of the jokes was somebody saying to him, wanted him to go do something. And he's like, when the person was saying you should do this, they're like, oh, it's as easy as riding a bicycle. And then Biden says, well, that's what I'm afraid of. Which I think is kind of funny. I like these kind of jokes. There's also that Catholic event that takes place. It's either right before the election or right after. I think it's right before the election. It's a big dinner, and it's just a roast. And I think that that's fantastic. I enjoy it. I can listen to Joe Biden tell jokes like that about Donald Trump acting like a six-year-old, and I'm amused by it. Somebody wrote that for him. He delivered the line or whatever. I think it's funny. What I don't think is funny is what Joe Biden is doing to the country. Mm. And I can separate the two. Like, if he says something that's funny like that, I can sit here and laugh at it. Here's another.
Like many of you here tonight, I pretend to do news on TV. My weekend update co-anchor, Michael Che, was going to join me here tonight. But in solidarity with President Biden, I decided to lose all my black support.
That's funny. Oh.
The room, yeah. Oh, these are unacceptable.
Oh. If Colin, is it Jost?
Jost.
Jost. If Colin Jost is saying that at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, there's truth to it.
Yeah.
This is good news, people. the idea that there would be an awakening of sorts from people. I don't know that it translates into Trump support, but that this Democrat Joe Biden stuff, that ain't it. I think it matters. Going back to the conversation we started the show with, Brad and I were talking about the YouTube poll today. Do you think that you know Donald Trump's VP pick? I am a strong, emphatic no. I have no idea, because I can think of a lot of good reasons that he would choose to pick one person or the other. But the more I think about it, and the more I definitively like, that's absolutely what he should do. I just feel like that is an exercise in futility, because the more convinced I am that he should pick somebody, the more guaranteed it is that he wouldn't choose that person. Another thing is, doesn't he have a place in, is it Jersey? Mm-hmm. Bedminster or whatever it is?
Yeah.
For him to switch his residence from Florida to Bedminster so that you don't have the Florida thing. Because, like, so many of the good ones are in Florida right now. The way that works, and I'm going to fudge this. I should have asked Will Scharf this earlier on the show, but you should check out that conversation. It was a good one. You can have a president and a vice president from the same state, but the electors, the slate of electors, can't cast for the president and the vice president should they be from the same state. So they would, like, have to vote for Trump and not Marco Rubio or Ron DeSantis or Byron Donalds or whoever else might be from Florida.
Kat Kamik.
Rick Scott.
Yeah.
Kat Kamik. So I don't think that the Florida thing is a game changer. I don't think it would be that big of a deal for him to say, my home is Jersey now. I don't think that would be bad at all. And I think that puts all the Florida people on the map. Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, their rom-com called Brunch in Miami.
Meet cute.
I hate that word. I learned that word on this show.
Did you?
I had never heard that before. That was a long time ago. We were talking about words. And somebody said something about a meet cute, and I had never heard of that. Ron DeSantis, I was listening to Brian Kilmeade this morning, and he was reporting that they have a mutual friend / donor who was playing golf with Ron DeSantis, and that it kind of, the report from Kilmeade was that it kind of started in conversation with DeSantis, and DeSantis was like, yeah, I'll meet with him. So I don't know that that's like a VP conversation, unless the donor was like, you should be Trump's VP. And DeSantis was like, well, I'd talk to him about it. I'm not getting my hopes up for that. I think Ron DeSantis can be a major player in the 2024 election, an influencer, so to speak, in the 2024 election to steer people towards Donald Trump without having to be the VP. But I think he would be a good VP, especially when it comes to policy and getting crap done, because that was the biggest problem that I have with Donald Trump's presidency in the first term, is it just took him too long to get stuff done. Donald Trump's been on the inside. He's not an outsider anymore. He's been on the inside, and he can, from day one, be much more effective than he was in his term two, or in his first term. Who does he need? Does it need to be, you know, when we talk about losing the black support with Colin Jost's comment there, does putting somebody who's a person of color on the ticket help turn some of those people of color who supported Joe Biden, who are not supporting him anymore, does that turn them into non-Biden voters all the way over to Trump supporters? Brad, did you have an answer to this question?
Yeah, I'm a no. I don't know who his VP pick is. Usually I can, like, get an idea of where somebody's leaning or somebody's going based on the reporting, but the reporting on this has been so sporadic and just scattered all over the place. I've heard Ben Carson, Vivek, Tulsi Gabbard.
Don't you feel like the reporting is always influential from the person who's doing the reporting?
I feel like that's where it is now. I mean, in years past, maybe not as much, but this one, yeah. It's like, it's just somebody trying to get out in front and is like, maybe if I say this person, I'll look like a genius.
I don't think Ben Carson is a good VP pick.
I don't think he is either. And this might sound...
Surgeon General?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, I think he should be part of the administration. But I don't know that Ben Carson helps the ticket in any way that Tim Scott doesn't. Like, I think Tim Scott would be a better pick for VP than Ben Carson would be. But I don't know if Tim Scott is the pick for VP.
What do you think?
Well, I'm a no on the poll simply because I don't think it's going to be anybody that we're expecting. I could see somebody like a Byron Donalds, but, you know, these are names that are just sort of out there. There's not like a leading candidate, so I just don't know. But I do think that one of the best things he could do going into the pick is to do the exact opposite that Joe Biden did. He said, well, I'm going to pick a woman and I'll probably pick a person of color, you know, whatever it was. He was just, I'm going to check off some boxes here. Trump should do the exact opposite and say, I really don't care about those things. I am going to pick the best woman or man for the job, regardless of their race or sex or anything. And then if it is Tim Scott, if it is a female, if it is Kristi Noem, whoever, great. We know that he picked the best person for the job, and he publicly said it. I would love to hear that.
Does anybody think it's going to be Kristi Noem?
No.
Not anymore.
I never did. Why would it be Kristi Noem? What does she offer?
I think she was a rising star within the Republican Party for a while, and she's female, and she apparently everybody knows her, says she's really, really smart, but I don't really know what she brings to the ticket at this point.
I don't see it. I'm going to just say it. She's very pretty, and she's a governor. She didn't lock her state down. I think that there's something to be said about that. But I haven't seen... I don't understand the Kristi Noem thing. I'd in a million light years more prefer Sarah Huckabee Sanders if we're going female governors. But I don't think you want to take somebody who's a governor out of the state. That is a huge, important position. And if you've got these strong governors in these red states, that's really going to matter and make a difference. And I just don't... I don't know why you would want to pull out somebody who is doing a really good job as a governor, which is why I just don't think that the Ron DeSantis thing, you were saying, like, you would like to see him keep doing Florida things.
Yes, I want Ron DeSantis to do Florida things and keep winning in Florida. I think, too, along those lines, whenever you think about, you know, if you're going to poll somebody that is a senator, I think you want a senator from a state that has a Republican governor, because the Republican governor assigns the replacement into the Senate.
I also don't know that that's safe. Jeff Sessions. I mean, are you sure they appoint it? It's not.
It might depend special on the state, but I think wasn't Martha McSally a special? No, she was appointed.
And then she ran right away.
And then she ran and she lost the appointment, but she also ran as a special election and lost.
In Illinois, Rob Blagojevich went to jail because he was basically auctioning off the Obama seat. Chris says on YouTube, answer the poll, do you think you know Donald Trump's pick? And she says no, but Trump apparently met with DeSantis over the weekend. Please, all caps, God, exclamation points. I agree. Chris says no. Does he know yet? I would assume that he's got a short list and he's going to go as long as he can without having to share that spotlight when the court cases are moving in the direction that they're moving. It's not hurting him. He's not being politically undercut by what he refers to the election interference and sham charges against him. So I think that you don't change the news cycle when it's going in your favor. And I would say right now it looks like from every poll that's out there and the way people are very disenchanted with the Biden administration, you just let that be the story as long as you possibly can. And when you need to change the narrative, boom, there's the VP pick. Lori says, no idea. Steven says, I'm available and ready to serve. Someone just needs to tell President Trump this, LOL. Price says no and not confident he can pick a good one. And Ender says, no clue. Would love to see Vivek as his pick or Tulsi. What do you guys think about Vivek Ramaswamy as the vice presidential pick?
I love giving him a platform. I don't know if he's the right guy for VP. I think he's turned some people off that you'd want to be pulling in with a vice presidential
like
pick. The middle. The hard.
You think Vivek gets...
No, he's pushed away the
middle.
You
think he's pushed away the middle?
Yeah, I do. I think he's had some polarizing opinions about foreign policy that have made him a little less palatable to the middle. And he's an extreme candidate and in a way that I like, but he's willing to pull no punches. And so I would love to see him get a platform where he speaks in the administration. I just don't know if VP is the right place.
I think Vivek's positions on foreign policy and stuff have been pretty isolationist and is actually favorable towards the middle. I think that his most polarizing position is being pro-Trump.
Yeah. I don't know if his foreign policy pushes away the middle or not. I don't know how many middle people are very, very, very hawkish.
No, they're not.
They're not. So I think Vivek...
Unless they have the Ukraine flag in their profile name.
Well, I just go with it. Like, I ask myself this question, president, and then whoever you think the vice president candidate would be, President Vivek Ramaswamy. I could see that. I think he would be a good president. So I don't think Vivek would be a bad pick.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I don't like Tulsi Gabbard.
That was my next question.
I don't. I think.
Why?
Well, I think she's still a Democrat in certain areas that I'm not. I don't trust her yet on those.
It's like supporting RFK Jr.
Yeah.
Because he's not Joe Biden, and politically he has crossed over in some COVID-related things that might align with what some Republican voters are interested in. Meanwhile, he's a raging liberal.
Yeah. And I think Tulsi Gabbard's foreign policy is even more isolationist than Vivek's is.
What do you think about Tulsi?
From what I know about her positions, especially on social positions, abortion, I think, is the main one that I hear that she's very pro-abortion. You know, that's not right for a Republican ticket. She says some things that I like, just like a lot of independent voices do, where they hit the things that you like. And
like
they,
what?
About the state being too big. She talks about the government just being, you know, in your back pocket too much and that kind of stuff. I like that stuff. And that's important right now. That's a very, very important issue right now. Like, how big is your government? And she's not a big government Democrat, so I like that. But
does that make her more libertarian than it does?
It would seem to.
But like left-leaning libertarian.
I think so. So I'm a no on her, too.
Yeah, I'm a big no on Tulsi Gabbard. I'm a no on Vivek Ramaswamy. I think he's good for the party. I just don't. He never got me to where I was like really buying what he was selling, because the sell felt too hard to me. And I don't know. There's still time. If he were the VP, I don't think that Ramaswamy's ego and Trump's ego can fit in the same room together. And the Donald Trump ego has to trump the vice president's ego in a way that the vice president understands what their role is and when it's their time to speak. Because if you really think about how much a vice president can be relegated during an administration, it's pretty significant. Mm-hmm. And if your job is to shake hands and kiss babies, that's where I feel like a Doug Burgum or something comes in to do that. But I don't want to waste the vice president position for 4 years for someone who I don't want to vote for. I want to vote for that vice president for president in 4 years.
Yeah. That makes me wonder, though, like you said, would that, the egos thing, would that preclude Ron DeSantis from being VP?
I think Ron DeSantis would know the task. I think he'd understand his assignment as vice president. I think that he would go in, if he were to agree to something, and I don't think that it's likely that it's a Trump DeSantis thing, but if he were to agree to it, I think that he would go into it, as any vice presidential candidate would want to know, like, what do you expect out of mm-hmm. me? Because I serve at the pleasure of the president is something that is said on a regular basis, because your goal has to be the goal of the president. It's not I serve at the pleasure of the vice president ever. The vice president has to be there to help move the president's thought process, policy, order, everything. And if you're serving at the pleasure of the president, if I'm Ron DeSantis, I'm going to say, how do I help you fulfill what you're promising voters when they vote for this ticket? And then if Donald Trump is smart, and I think he is, he finds out where Ron DeSantis expands the ticket. And you put Ron DeSantis on, you know, Ron DeSantis is a naval lawyer. He is the same position, like a JAG officer, the way Tom Cruise was in A Few Good Men. And Ron DeSantis's role when he was serving overseas, I believe in Iraq and Afghanistan or one or the other, was to deal with like rules of engagement and mm-hmm. say that people would say, this is what we need to do. We need to go do this. And he would say, okay, here's how you're going to do this legally. He understands how to use the system and say, here is the path to getting that done. And he has done that incredibly adequately in Florida. He understands these laws. He's creative in the way he gets stuff done. He could lend so much guidance to the administration to get things done. He could do all of that without having to be the vice president. The question is, if Donald Trump puts on somebody who 100% is going to know their role and not take any of the spotlight again away from Donald Trump because Donald Trump's ego can't handle it, which is possible. I don't know. I don't want to set the Republican Party up. Like, just look at the Democrats right now. Kamala, that's the next. Mm-hmm. If Joe Biden and Harris win this election, do the Democrats just inherit and have to follow along with a Kamala Harris presidency because she's the VP? Blech, I wouldn't want that at all. And so I don't want to do that for the Republicans either. Give us your thoughts. Give us your reaction to the Andy Frey YouTube channel. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about which party, Republicans or Democrats, are funnier and who's killing comedy. I give you one guess. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Andy Frey Show. Appreciate you being with us this afternoon, Monday afternoon. Rainy weekend, but pretty nice day out there right now, I think. Low 70s. That's a very nice welcomed spring temperature. So we appreciate you spending some of that afternoon here with us. We've been saying this for quite a while on this show. I don't think we're the only people saying it, but the idea that comedy, I've said that we're going to save free speech in two different places, on the comedy stage and from the pulpit. People who are willing to do and say what they want to do and say without the pressures of cancel culture and everything coming in, and really trying to spook people into not talking about the things that matter to them. There's a huge, huge emphasis right now on trying to control speech. And comedians are certainly going to be some of the ones who are going to have to save us from that. And Jerry Seinfeld was on, I think it's the New Yorker Radio Hour. And this is what he had to say.
Nothing really affects comedy. People always need it. They need it so badly. And they don't get it. It used to be you would go home at the end of the day. Most people would go, oh, Cheers is on. Oh, MASH is on. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is on. All in the Family's on. You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. When you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke. Well, that's the end of your comedy. They move the gates, like in skiing. Yeah. Culture, the gates are moving. Your job is to be agile and clever enough that wherever they put the gates, I'm going to make the gate.
Jerry Seinfeld, of course, everybody knows who Jerry Seinfeld is, has been doing stand-up comedy and writing for very, very funny and very successful TV shows. I've heard him be frustrated. There was one thing that he did, and he was on a panel, and someone's like, I noticed that you don't have a lot of diversity And he goes, oh, that's where we're going with this. And he basically said something to the effect of, like, I hate people like you. I was straight out with it. But in this clip here, in this interview, radio interview that he was doing with the New Yorker podcast, he comes straight out and says the left.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be new to me from a guy like Seinfeld, who he is the type of person that if I were ever fortunate enough to be in the presence of him, like in a meeting setting or in a discussion setting, I would not feel like I was going to be safe from him if he found something funny about me, that it was going to be put out there. He doesn't strike me as the person who's like, not these people, or we're going to focus only on those people. And he's not a shock comedian.
No.
He just finds things to be humorous, which is something that I asked Tom Chaloux on Friday. Do you, as a comedian, have to look for the funny, or do you have to sometimes suppress the funny? Because I think people who have that just different outlook on life, you find yourself finding humor and funny things where you're not supposed to laugh about this. Like, you're supposed to be straight-laced, straight-faced, and there's supposed to be no humor in certain kinds of things. But I think that comedians can always find a wrinkle of comedy, and the bold ones go out and they say it on stage, and they make a lot of money because they're willing to say it and do it. You can't do that in a world where you worship cancel culture and you turn over your First Amendment rights to speak about things, because it's too scary if you do. I just find it interesting that Jerry Seinfeld is out there saying the extreme left. To me, that seems like a shift.
I remember being in a room like this before. It was a sitcom writer's room, and there were probably six or seven people in there. And everybody was kicking around jokes. And that's what you do when you're writing a sitcom, is you kick around jokes and you talk about which way you want scenes to go and things like that. And there was an intern in the room who I didn't know what her politics were, but apparently she was pretty far left. And she started criticizing the room because some of the things we were saying were inappropriate. And it was like, yeah, that's the process, is you say things and they might be inappropriate and then they get kicked out. They don't make the show, or you're doing it to make people feel uncomfortable, because that's the artistic process. And the room just died. It was so terrible how the creative process just came to a screeching halt because somebody was there to judge.
Well, I was going to ask, I would feel like maybe one person like that could kill a room, but that answers that question. I think what we're seeing with Seinfeld here is ire placed on the correct source. Like, we have a problem with comedy, because he said that. He said, you come home and he's like, what's on TV that's so funny anymore? And it's not there. So that begs the question, why isn't it there? And so he's like, this is the problem. This is why we can't have fun. Because these people don't know how to laugh. They know how to get angry. They know how to get outraged. And they know how to get sad. But they don't know how to laugh. And that's why we don't have comedy.
I gosh, I don't want to eat my words. And I would if I were wrong. But does the right do this?
There are aspects of the right that mm-hmm. are very, very like litmus test mm-hmm. that you have to pass.
Wait, but for comedy?
But not for, I don't think so for comedy.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, anybody can imagine being in a room where people are letting jokes fly and you're like, oh, we cannot put that one in. And Chaloux said that last week too. And we know what it's like. And here we'll have conversations on the break and we'll be talking about things that are funny. And I'm pretty certain that most of you would think it was funny, but it's like, that's not stuff that can go over the air. So you don't do it over the air. If you're writing a sitcom, naturally, probably the things you laugh the hardest at are not going to get included because you can't. But I can imagine, like, I just can't imagine it happening in comedy. Like, if you're a really stuffy Republican, and usually what that means is somebody who is, I'll say it this way, like a Bible thumper, Brad, you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about, like somebody who wants to come in and rain on everybody's parade and is a holier than thou type of a person and can't find humor in. But I mean, those people are not in comedy rooms the way the leftists would be, who would have the purity tests on what we are going to do and what we're not going to do, which is why I asked the question, like, Does the right kill the funny anywhere?
No, I can't think of anywhere where that's happening now.
The closest I've seen is I've seen some people on the right go after the Babylon Bee. Like, we shouldn't be making fun of our own. And it's like, yes, we should. We should laugh at everything that is funny because that's what it was. And Seth Dillon, to his credit, came out and defended it. And I don't even remember what it was. And after he did that, that was kind of that.
But even the Babylon Bee is a little bit of an outsider source for comedy. Mm. You know, the mainstream stuff, the Hollywood stuff, the stuff that's getting made with big money, there's not really a lot of conservative voices in that stuff, first of all, to be censored. But those people are just not put in the room because it's not really like part of the culture. The culture is leftist in those rooms.
The difference between comedy and bullying, to me, is comedy is when everybody is fair game. Mm-hmm. If you are getting together and saying, no, we only laugh at these people, we don't laugh at those people, then you're a bully. And the only difference is you either laugh at everybody or nobody.
Well, yeah, because whenever you target a group and that's the only group that you target, then it becomes malicious.
Yes.
So hateful. You want to say something funny because it's like, hey, like Ryan, when I tease you, I'm not coming from a spot of anything other than, you know, you're
hate,
my friend. And this
disgust.
Is hate, rage, and disgust.
I side with Annie here.
But the idea
which
is
rare.
Which is like, and Ryan makes fun.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Me too.
I'm here for you, Ryan.
And we're not.
But it's all off air.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But when Annie does it.
I know. You just shell up.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do now?
That's just it. We do it. It's like when my buddies and I get together, we make fun of one another. We rag on one another, and it's fine. It's great.
Because you know you like each other.
Because we like one another. And as a matter of fact, if my buddies weren't making fun of me, I'd be like,
what's wrong, guy?
What's up?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. It's a really good icebreaker. Like when you are getting to know somebody, to jab them a little bit, it makes them feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And you can't do that unless there is a little bit of camaraderie. And that is gone. That is gone. It has become activist comedy because, like both of you just said, it makes fun of one side, one group of people, and not the other.
Well, it's not comedy. It's bullying. Look no further than the Alec Baldwin, Donald Trump. I really believe that if Saturday Night Live made fun of Donald Trump and Joe Biden in equal parts, that Saturday Night Live would have a bigger contingent of MAGA support than they would anything else. Because you can't, if you're so stuffy as a Republican that you're not allowed to make any jokes around Donald Trump, then you're not actually paying attention to anything Donald Trump does. Because that dude is funny. Like, funny in the way he is. I was just thinking the other day, we were playing a Trump clip from a press conference after he walked out of the courtroom. And I thought to myself, I didn't say this on the air, I thought to myself, like, when I hear Donald Trump speak and I'm only hearing it, I'm not watching it, I actually hear a Trump impersonator more than I hear Donald Trump, because the good Trump impersonators are hilarious.
Yes.
What's his name? Shane Gillis or
Shane
whatever?
Shane Gillis is amazing.
Yes. And there's so much material there that people who love the man would still 100% be able to laugh at. I think the joke that we played from the White House correspondent dinner of Joe Biden saying that, you know, age is a big issue because his opponent is a six-year-old is funny. And I can sit here and think that that's laughable because the joke in and of itself is funny. The problem is that the converse of that would never, like, you wouldn't do the converse of that in an SNL skit or whatever, because they wouldn't want, honestly, to point out the truth that exists in the comedy that Joe Biden is too old. When Joe Biden does that joke, he is joking about his age.
Mm-hmm.
The joke is not funny if Joe Biden is not super old.
Right.
The joke is funny because he's making an age joke, which everybody's like, oh, Joe Biden in his age. And when you flip it at the end and say that the reason why the age is an issue is because Donald Trump is 6 year old, I find that to be good navigational humor. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay. Like, I can handle that because I'm a big girl and I'm not going to hear that and go, oh man, they're being mean to Donald Trump. What? Like, of course they are. I'm okay with it. I just want it to be equal. And since it's not equal, it is bullying, and people are off put by that. No good person wants to be adjacent to the mean girl.
Right.
And the media, on the whole, is the mean girl. Let's take a quick break. We'll get the results to the YouTube live chat poll when we come back. Do you think you know Donald Trump's VP pick? Yes or no? I'm surprised at the results of this poll so far. Go in and weigh in and let us know what you think. Let's see here. Russell said, I said no. No reason to announce it just yet. Wait another month. Then he and Biden can disclose who they are both picking for VP. Oh!
And there's a twist?
Yes, a little twist at the end. We'll see what the results are. When we come back. Don't go. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. A couple extra stories before we get to those poll results that I came across on Twitter. One of them was tweeted by an Auden B. Cabello, Eagle Pass local resident Louis De La Torre, came across an alligator while fishing this morning at the Rio Grande. Previous sightings of alligators have been confirmed by Border Patrol. Why have we been doing this? Put alligators in the Rio Grande. You don't need a wall. You just need the suggestions that alligators might be present.
Is this the Florida National Guard arriving?
Yeah, possibly. This bit, the video, I'm retweeting it right now at Annie Fresh Show. It's a big one. How many alligators need to be present to make people go, nope?
The answer to that question is the same for all people. One, that one alligator.
This one here.
Yeah.
I see that. I'm never getting in that water.
Now the answer would be different if it were piranha. Because if there were one piranha, you might chance it. But a few, that's how many you'd need.
There's never one piranha.
They're always a pack of piranha.
And it's not like you see them.
That's the term for them. Pack.
School.
Ryan's full of crap.
Yes, he is.
And you can tell by he stuck his nose at a 45-degree angle up in the air while he was saying that. Just to try to sell it. I don't think he sold it.
Well, not now that you pointed it out. Everybody was with me.
But no, really. Alligators?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is this an uncommon thing? Like, do alligators not usually go to the Rio Grande?
I've never heard of alligators being in the Rio Grande.
I haven't either. So how did it get there?
Yeah. I mean...
I think I have an idea.
Yeah.
They're usually like in swampy, marshy areas and stuff like that. And the Rio Grande isn't like that. It's kind of like desert and then water through the middle of it.
Exactly. Bobo Farm says, didn't Trump suggest that, or was that a B story? Who knows?
Nobody knows.
It might be a solution. Yeah.
I tell you what, the way that alligator probably got in there is that an alligator was walking around one day.
It's just an animatronic.
And somebody, oh, it's eating a fish.
Starts to malfunction a little.
Oh, we didn't consider the fact that water hurts animatronics. Somebody saw an alligator, they grabbed it by the tail, and they just started spinning around. And then they just let it go, and if it went in the Rio Grande, it went in the Rio Grande.
Landed by a pack of piranhas.
Yeah, which were also out on the land.
Yeah, you're just like David Attenborough.
I've been told this many times.
But no, really, alligators.
Or crocodiles. Are you opposed to that?
I think alligators are bigger.
Yes.
Depends on the crocodile. The Nile crocodile is really big.
Yeah, but they're in the Nile.
So is this. Yeah, but they'd also be in the Rio Grande if you put them there.
How big are the Rio Grande crocodiles?
Depends on which ones you put in there.
I don't think we know what we're talking about. You should see my husband's face. I know you think you know what you're talking about. You should see my husband's face when I start talking about animals and history and like just ancient history and stuff like that. The kids will ask me questions. And I've told this story before, but I just like start making up factual stories.
Oh,
just
I
like,
love this.
Just like Ryan does.
Yeah. It's great. It's fun.
Mom, what kind of bird is that? And I give him an answer.
That's awesome.
And unfortunately, it's backfired because my kids now believe nothing that I say.
Oh, okay.
But I can only really get away with it when Jared's not there. Because he probably, for the sake of my children, is like, Mom doesn't know what she's talking about. And they're like, Mom. And some, you know, how your kids, I don't know if your kids are like partial to one of the parents and playful with the other. One of our kids particularly is partial to me and playful with Jared. And if I say it, she's just like, Mom said it was this, so that's just real.
Yeah.
That's an Oreo bird. That's the last one I said. I don't know. It was black on each end and white in the middle. And
that's where
like,
we get the cookie.
That's an Oreo. That's what I said. I go, the name of the cookie was actually after the bird.
Yeah. And the original Oreos were made from bird droppings.
That's not true. That would be disgusting.
Oh, right? Okay. That part's not true.
Uh-huh.
You're right.
The other, oh gosh, I'm going to play this real quick because I really want to get this clip in here. This is so fantastic. This is a real story from Louisiana. Listen to this.
Prosecutors in Livingston Parish say justice is finally served after 54-year-old Glenn Sullivan admitted he raped a young girl.
The allegations have began several years ago that Mr. Sullivan had repeatedly raped her. And one of the rapes, actually the first rape, at the age of 14, she became pregnant.
A judge sentenced Sullivan to 50 years behind bars and physical castration. Castration is something Assistant District Attorney Brad Cassio says is not common, but paints a clear picture.
The state legislature gives us tools that we can use to fight crime and protect victims. And this is one of those tools in a prosecutor's toolbox that we have at our disposal. And if I have the opportunity to do it, mm-hmm. and I think that it's just and that the crime calls for it, I'm going to try my best to use it.
The suspect will serve
physical castration. This guy raped a 14-year-old girl, got her pregnant, is going to spend 50 years in jail, and they're taking
tiny guillotine.
Those testicles.
Dem.
I am for this.
Yes.
By way of alligator.
Okay.
By way of
okay,
alligator.
I mean, that's a twist,
but
okay.
Holy cow.
Two birds, one stone. Let's go. Line them up at the Rio Grande. You do that to a child. Chomp, chomp.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys have anything to say? You're speechless.
Well, we're in favor of it.
Yes.
We're, I think, picturing it, how it goes down. And
I'm not.
It's.
Do we break now?
Highly effective, Annie. That's what I'll conclude the show with.
That's the point.
Highly effective method.
The point. Snip, snip, chomp, chomp. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Take care of all of those
here,
problems.
Here, just stand in front of this alligator.
In other news, do you think you know Donald Trump's VP pick? 86% of you said no. And I am with the 86%. But I want to know who it's going to be. Maybe Mark Reardon knows. He's coming up next. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.